Let's rock, baby. And welcome to the Retro Asylum. I'm looking at Chris, who's smiling a bit too much here. What did I do wrong, Chris?
I just clapped again.
But
just
why?
In case we needed another clap, but I obviously failed to put you off.
Hi, listeners. I'm here with Chris, and this is a Game Club episode. We haven't done one of those in 2 months now because we skipped the last one, didn't we, mate?
Yeah. What was that last one? Actually, you and I recorded like this, WHB.
Yeah, could be.
That was with The Godfather.
Mm, yeah, that's been a long time ago.
I think the last time you and I recorded a Game Club episode, just the two of us, it was probably Day of the Tentacle.
Yeah, could be. And that was when that was actually the kind of like the sister episode to this one, because Day of the Tentacle was when I picked one of my favorite games from back in the day that you hadn't played before. And this time we're playing one of your favorites from back in the day that I never played before. So,
yeah. Aren't you a lucky boy?
Oh, yes. But looking forward to getting into that later on. I don't know what I've done wrong, but punishment I got, at least. That's my take on this.
It's not that bad.
No. It's worse. But before we start talking about the game that we've been playing this month, what have you been up to, mate?
I did a birthday. Another one. I'm another year closer to death.
Ah, yes, but closer to the magical 42 as well, which is a good age to be at.
Why is that a good age?
Well, it's the meaning of life.
Is it?
You never read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Not for a very long time.
Okay. So 42 is the question for the question for what is the meaning of life and something. The computer calculates for millions of years and comes up with 42.
Oh, you've mentioned that actually in our chat, haven't you, before? I need to reread that. I think I read that when I was about 14.
Yeah.
And a lot of the humour, I reckon, probably went right over my head.
Yeah, but actually, I'm ready for a reread of that as well. So maybe we should read it and play the text adventure.
That would be good fun. And then we could do an episode on it.
Yes, I'd love that.
Look at this. Mm. Look at this. We're making things up on the fly.
Yes. And they will never happen, because that's what we do so often here.
It might.
I really want to read that again, actually. And I'm guessing the selection of the number 42 is probably simply because it looks good in binary, because it's just 10 10 10. That's 42. So I'm guessing he just looked at that and thought that had to be the meaning of life.
Yeah, maybe we could just call it randomly episode 42 as well.
Mm, yeah, well, since we stopped numbering the episodes anyway, Dean told us not to say the number because we screw it up all the time, we might as well just pick random numbers.
Only Dean's allowed to number the episodes now.
This one is number Q, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, number JLM.
Yes.
Let's go with that. Yeah, but I got some really nice... In fact, all my gifts were gaming-related, which was nice. I did actually say... I did ask for money to go to charity, actually, rather than get gifts, because I don't probably like you, mate. You get to the point where you don't really need anything. Mm. But my wife was insistent that I give her a list of some ideas, so I did. I made some stuff up. So I got a really a cool... I'm looking at it now. Monkey Island framed picture.
Yeah.
Which I'll show you, Mads, on camera. I won't do it right now because otherwise my audio will go funny. And it's probably even going funny because I'm turning around. But that was really cool. So I think it was done by... do you know the website Etsy?
Yes, I do.
So it was done on Etsy, someone who just blew up a screenshot and stuck it in a frame. It's really nice, though.
Okay, nice.
And similarly, from Etsy, a mug with a couple of screenshots from the Monkey Island 2, which is really cool. So I can look at Guybrush and drink my coffee, which is really nice. I got a bitmap books. One of every single birthday now, I get one of Sam's books.
Mm.
And this time I got the Game Boy box art book.
Oh, yeah.
It's just really, really nice. Really nice. Although it makes me sad that the Japanese box art for all of these 8-bit and 16-bit games are just so much nicer than the ones that we got in the West.
Yes,
aren't they? Some of those Japanese box art are amazing, and it's no different on the Game Boy.
Yeah, it's so weird to me that they chose to redraw them and redo them when they had to enter the West. But they did.
I know. Yeah. And in Japan as well, they don't get that really annoying Game Boy text down the sides of the box, which takes up a good third of it.
Okay.
So they get just really nice art and really nice the calligraphy.
Yeah.
Which we sadly missed out on most of the time. Although some of the Western box art are really nice, but some of the Japanese ones are absolutely beautiful.
Mm.
So that was cool. I got Horizon Zero Dawn, the board game.
There's a board game?
Yeah, there's a board game.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a 1-4 player cooperative board game.
So have you tried it?
No, not yet.
Hmm.
So I need to play it on my own so I can tell the family how to play it.
Yeah, okay.
So I kind of need
cooperative board gaming, that's great to do with your kids. I've been doing that as well, actually. I've been playing the Harry Potter Battle of Hogwarts, I think, board game.
Yeah, you mentioned this. Yeah,
great fun. Played through. Yeah, it was really, really good. It's kind of, I mean, Jim would love this. It's a board game, but it's also a deck building game, actually. So
he would love it.
Yes, definitely. So you build up a deck of cards to play, and then you need to defeat all of the different Harry Potter villains, right? And it's really, really good, and it gets hard later on, so you need to retry some of the... You play through all 7 books, so you need to retry some of them later on. But we actually got all the way through this summer, and that was good.
Oh, that's good. Well, you've done them all now, all the scenarios?
Yes, yes.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. And how old would you say the kids have to be able to play it?
About 13, 14, okay. At least.
Because my daughter is just obsessed with Harry Potter now, but she's only 9.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could definitely play it with a 9-year-old, but you'd have to help a lot. So.
Yeah, I mean, she's pretty sharp when it comes to this stuff, but she's probably a little bit too young.
So I used to play Magic the Gathering with Sue when she was about that age, so...
Yeah, yeah, you've got to start them early, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. Otherwise, how will they ever become nerds?
Exactly, teach them properly.
Mm.
And playing Planescape Torment as we are at the moment in the current Game Club month. I've been thinking to myself, I wonder if the kids have fancy a little bit of Dungeons & Dragons with me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that just might be a step too far.
They need to be a bit older for that to be really fun.
Yeah.
I played a bit of that with my kids as well.
Yeah. And then my final gift was a Switch game. Astro Junos. Have you ever heard of that? The old Neo Geo game? The shooter?
No. I don't think so, actually.
I think it's a pretty obscure Japanese shooter that was on the Neo Geo back in the 90s. And there was a Switch sequel released earlier this year. And I was reading, it might have been Edge or Wireframe, one of the magazines, which was talking about some of the latest releases. And this game, Astro Junos 2, has... been given a limited release, just a retail release, but a limited print run of physical copies. And it was saying that this is going to be a really valuable game in the future because it's one of those obscure Japanese games which does hold its value, but because of the limited print run as well. So I thought, well, I'll get one of them. Why not?
Nice one. Did you play it then?
Yeah, it's really good. Mm. Yeah, it's really good. I've not played the original, so you know, I'm like, I don't want to get too much into the sequel until I've had a look at the original. But it's really good. It's like it's kind of Thunder Force-y kind of look to it.
Yep.
It's got that kind of vibe to it. I have not spent too much time with it yet, but so far so good. It seems really good.
Yeah, cool, so, mate.
I feel like I did really well.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you? You've been away on holiday, which normally means that you play at least one game.
Yes, and this time I played Miles and Kilo, a platformer that King Trilo from our Discord forums gifted me on Steam.
He's been dishing it out.
Yes, I knew nothing about that game. Never heard about it before, but he gave it to me, so I thought, well, I might as well have a look. So I put it on the Steam Deck and took it with me on holiday and became completely obsessed with it. It's it's a rock hard platformer with really simple mechanics. You have your stick and you have two buttons. That's what you need to control. But it switches up the mechanics sometimes because you're controlling Miles and his dog Kilo. Some levels you'll just be Miles. Some levels you'll be Miles hanging in Kilo's leash while he's running across the screen. And then it becomes like a runner game where you don't need to do anything apart from jumping and evading stuff. Because he just runs by himself all the time. But it's like Super Meat Boy, you know, where the levels are really, really hard, but I mean, the delay from you dying to you starting the retry is almost instant. There's no delay at all. So you just throw yourself at the level time after time again. And one level is 30 seconds, maybe 45 seconds if it's or a minute if it's a long level. So you just, and there are no staking points, no places to save at all. A level has to be done in one go without dying. But that is...
Do you have limited lives?
Yeah, infinite lives. Just keep...
Oh, infinite lives.
Yes. Oh, you need that. I mean, the last level took me exactly 99 tries before I got it. Because it, of course, it counts the number of tries you've had. And I failed 98 times, it said, when I was done with the game. But man, what a game. I highly recommend this for anybody who likes a platforming challenge. It's charming, it's fun, and it's fast-paced and frantic and every single time I died, it was my fault, not the game's fault. The way that you start the level over every single time, and maybe you need to play through the same 15, 20 seconds 50 times because, now you've mastered those, but you don't really know what you need to do in the next part. But still, because it's so fast-paced and because you can really, really feel yourself getting better with every single try.
Yeah, you're going to do it eventually.
Exactly. So it becomes so satisfying. I was well chuffed when I got through that final level. So I highly recommend people pick that up. I think it's available for Switch actually as well, but definitely available on Steam because that's where I have it. And I bought it for a friend actually that didn't have it, so I'm guessing you will be playing it at some point as well.
Yeah, I'm gonna do exactly what you did. And thank you very much. So I'm going on holiday next week, so I'm gonna take it with me. So I'm gonna play that, and I'm gonna replay To the Moon.
Yeah. So I got this for free, and I loved it so much. I thought I need to support the developers. So I went and bought it and gave it to you instead.
Thanks. And then I'll pay it forward because I'm sure I'll like it because you know my taste.
Mm.
So I will also buy it and pay it forward to somebody else because that's what you need to do with these things.
So there is big shout out to King Trilo. That was a great gift, mate. I love that.
Yeah. He's become our indie game curator.
Yes, he's posted a lot of links to videos and stuff with the more of these this kind of platformers that I need to check out because, man, I do love those.
Yeah, I think he follows some YouTubers, doesn't he, who promote these indie games?
Yeah,
or play a lot of them, so he gets these little hints and tips. It's like going to the races with a tipster.
Yeah,
isn't it? Being with King Trilo and Discord, and you just have to watch out for what he's backing and what he's playing on Steam.
Yep.
There's so many. You should try, if you like that kind of game, you should really try. We spoke about it when we were talking with the Sega Power guys. They were talking about that game that was one of the demos on the disc was Flea.
Yeah.
And it's on the Evercade Indie Heroes cart as well. Okay. You should really check that out. If you like that kind of, that constant replaying those, Flea's more of a puzzle platformer because you've got to work out how to get to the exit and you collect these like, packets of blood, which give you extra lives. So really, the challenge is how you get to the. It's a single screen, and how you get to the exit whilst collecting these packets of blood along the way. Because if you don't collect the packets of blood, you'll very quickly run out of lives on the later levels.
Mm.
And just like it sounds like in that game you've just been talking about, when you die, it's just an instant restart.
Yeah.
And there's a perpetual movement to the flea, so it's always jumping, so you've got to time your jumps over spikes and whatnot. It's a bit like, it's not dissimilar to Thing on a Spring as well.
Okay.
You imagine the kind of the locomotion from that. It's not dissimilar to that.
Funny, I was just thinking about that when I biked home from work today. Thing on a Spring.
Were you?
Yeah, yeah. Humming the little tune to myself. And yeah.
Hopefully you weren't resembling Thing as you cycled home.
No, I hope not. I hope not.
But do check out Flea. And it's had a sequel as well. It's really good. Really, really, really playable. Very, very difficult. But very, very good.
But apart and from... You've obviously sorry?
I've just been saying you've played To the Moon, like me.
I have. Wonderful game that we'll be discussing on playthrough in a couple of weeks.
It's great, huh?
Oh, I loved it. I'm going to play through it again.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you need to play it again once you've let the story wash over you and it's sunk in. There's some wild theories going around on our playthrough Discord, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not funny. Sure to subscribe to all of them.
No, but I love that the game led to all of these theories. It's great, great. I love that the guys are sharing it. But it's a funny game because it's a game where you play it, you get the narrative, and then the next day it starts sinking in. At least that's how it worked for me. And then it's really, really good. I've been thinking a lot about that.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It is the kind of game that you think about a lot when you have these random thoughts about it.
Mm.
And it kind of seeps in, doesn't it, over the days after you've played it.
Looking forward to that as well. But apart from that, I've actually been playing another game that I got as a gift on Steam from you at some point. Rookie.
Yeah.
That is a beauty of a game. And it's a huge game. I actually didn't know it was that big. I mean, I've been playing it for many, many hours now. It is pretty much just a point-and-click adventure without the pointing and clicking, because you have direct control over your little... she's called Tove, the protagonist. And it's a tour through Old Norse stories. It's not the Northern gods that you probably know from the Norse mythology. It's got nothing to do with that. It's Old Norse folklore. So I know a lot of these stories that you're touching on here, and a lot of the magical creatures that you meet. But Tove is on a quest to rescue her brother, who's been taken by one of these creatures, and in doing that, she travels through these woods and meet all these different fairy tale creatures, and you need to, in classic point and click adventure style, pick up stuff and use it somewhere else and talk to people, and it's brilliant. I'm loving it.
It does look beautiful.
Oh yeah, and the graphical style is really good, and it's a great game on the Steam Deck as well. I've been playing it like 50% on the Steam Deck and 50% on the PC when I've been at home. Yeah. But it's a beauty of a game on the Steam Deck. So yeah.
Is it difficult? The puzzles hard?
Some of them are, yeah. But it's not too hard. I haven't had to look up any guides at all. But some of them are. There were some wolf puzzles. I remember that it took me quite some while to figure out.
Yeah, it's another game that I'd absolutely love to play. So I already had it.
Yeah.
So I got it through some bundle or other, and I already had it. And because of the content, the Norse stuff, I thought, well, Mads are like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, I definitely do. I'm going to finish that soon when I find the time. But so many games to play and so little time.
So the endless backlog. So I'm playing, obviously Planescape Torment on the go. I think I've just got out of the Mortuary, which is the starting area.
Okay.
The brilliant thing about Planescape Tournament is that there's about half a dozen ways in which you can do that. I think I'll keep the powder dry for when we talk about that in a couple of months. But yeah, I'm enjoying that. I've got Metal Gear 2 on the go for the community playthrough, which I think I'm the only one playing that. But that's fine. I'll carry the torch through August, and Again, I'm really enjoying that. Although it's brilliant. I'm playing it on the MSX, the original hardware, because, hey, that's what you got to do, right? That's what you got to do. But I can't... The only way to save Metal Gear 2 is to save to disk.
Okay.
And my floppy drive is absolutely knackered on the MSX 2. I must do something about that. But you can. You can, in this one, you can save. You can use a password.
Okay.
But the password is about 56 characters long.
That's painful.
So you have to... In fact, it may be even more than that. Maybe it's about 56 or 64 characters long. And if you get one character wrong, you have to start the whole thing again. So I allow about 15 minutes to load the game. By the time I've typed out the password, got it wrong a couple of times and actually get it right, it takes me about 15-20 minutes to get started. So I'm thinking Metal Gear 2 by the end of the month might be a struggle, particularly with being on holiday.
Could be.
Yeah. One of the guys, I think it was Muppets 4, he's got it running on his Steam Deck through EmuDeck.
Yeah.
I must say I was tempted to forgo the original hardware this time.
Okay. Well, it is holiday time, so getting it on the Steam Deck would be cool.
I know, it would be very cool. And then the other game I've got on the go, other than Octopath Traveler, which listeners to Playthrough will know I've been playing through that, 74 hours in on that now.
Wow.
74 hours, Mads. It's a long time, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. The end is close, but not so close. It's going to be 90 plus hours by the time I'm done with that.
Crazy.
Thankfully, it is on the Switch, and it is a game that you could be, because it's chapter based, you can just put down for your good few weeks before you come back to it.
Yeah, okay.
And that's a long game. And Fallout Tactics, which for the next stage of our crossover with the Retrospectives podcast.
Okay.
Which is another pretty chunky game.
Hmm.
Man, need some short games. Sure, I need to second the final quarter of this year is going to be all short games for me.
I'll believe that when I see it.
A lot of long games this year. I know. Okay. We need to get some more. Should we go on to some news, mate? We haven't got a lot of news, but should we talk about what we do have?
Yep. Go ahead, mate.
Right. First thing, as I said, we haven't got a lot, and this won't be news to a lot of people. But I wanted to get your view on the C64 collection for the Evercade, because those pre-orders launched last week, comes out in October. What do you reckon about home computer games on the Evercade?
Yeah, I like the idea. I mean, of course, the C64, I'm not sure I like that it's the C64 collection.
They've done a partnership with the guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
it's a licensing thing.
I mean, there are some good games in here, and some games I don't really know. But I mean, playing Alley Cat and Impossible Mission and Jumpman and summer games and winter games would be quite good fun. I wonder how they work, because playing with a D-pad and a single button, which these games are made for, how will this work on that little screen? But
yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
So these games, some of them are modern games, aren't they? Some of them are modern C64 games.
Yeah.
So seven newly released titles, and the rest are back in the day. I'm not too bothered about the old C64 games, to be honest, because they've been around for a while now. And there's always ways to play those. What I do like the idea of is a curated collection of modern C64 games.
Yeah, true.
That excites me. Mm. And what they do say in the blurb on their website is that there is going to be, there's going to be more, not just C64 collections coming next year, but also further home computer-based cartridge collections. I'd love a collection of modern Amiga games, for instance.
Yeah. Yeah,
because there's some great modern Amiga games around.
I'm guessing getting the real classics, if you wanted the old ones, would be hard as well because of licensing. Because many different companies own these these days,
exactly.
And some you don't even know who owns them anymore.
Yeah. I mean, the C64 guys have obviously already got their licensing, and the terms of their licensing must allow them to sublicense.
Yeah, seems so.
So to the likes of Evercade, but it'd be difficult to say, you know, do a specy collection if those games aren't already licensed, because you, God knows who are the rights holders.
But to be completely honest, mate, I'm not really that interested in stuff that isn't handheld, on a handheld. I know I may be off here, but I love my Lynx collections for the Evercade. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff I like to be playing. I mean, if I want to be playing a Super Nintendo or a Mega Drive game, I'll probably want to play it on a CRT instead. So
yeah,
I really like. I'd like them to make Game Boy collections and Game Boy Color collections and so on and so forth with modern games as well, because there are so many good modern Game Boy Color games. But I like to see the C64 being represented wherever. So, but I'm thinking probably this isn't for me. And these modern C64 classics, I'll probably play those on the real hardware or on my Mister instead. So
yeah, you're not the only one who says that about playing handheld games. It feels weird to be playing computer or console games or even arcade games on a handheld.
Yeah, I want a proper joystick for playing stuff like this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do. I think Dean Swain says exactly the same thing. Okay. It doesn't really bother me if the controls are right. And where I trust the Evercade guys, given the conversation we had with them whenever that was last year now, wasn't it?
Mm.
Where I trust them is to get this stuff right.
Yeah.
And to really lovingly get the controls right, because these games will live and die by the way they control. They're great games. We know they're great games. They've got a great selection of games. But if they don't control right, they're not going to be playable.
No, you're right. You're right. And these guys definitely do put out a quality product.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So watch out for that on Evercade. That seems like, and they've got a new colour scheme as well, which is going to play havoc with my OCD, and obviously the collectors amongst us are going to be going crazy for getting these things. But they've got this new their blue spine. Is it blue or is it purple? One, two. No, purple is the arcade. Blue spine for the home computer collections. Okay.
Yeah.
So they've got purple for the arcade, red for the console, and blue now for the computers. So, yeah, I think you've got to catch them all, haven't you?
Yep.
You have to. And speaking of releases of modern games on old systems, our friends over at Bitmapsoft have just published their latest. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's coming in 3-4 days, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Well, I think the pre-order opens.
Okay.
Or maybe it is the release in three or 4 days.
I think it is.
I mean, the package that these guys put together, I know it is pricey, isn't it? I mean, it's $42.50 for an Amiga game. It is pricey.
Yeah,
but definitely. Have you seen all the stuff that's in there?
Yeah.
This package? Like with the beer mat. Have you seen that?
Yes.
It looks really, really good. And they've got a mouse mat with some art from the game. And the listeners will probably hear me clicking away because I'm just looking at this screenshot of
the instruction manual, like in the good old days. Yeah. And,
an 8-page manual. I mean, I know it is a lot of money, and I know there's listeners thinking, oh, that's way too much money. It is a lot of money, but you simply just don't get this from just downloading from itch, do you?
Oh, no.
You know, the tactile nature of all the stuff that we love, you know, all these little extras, and then just seeing three newly minted Amiga discs as well.
I mean,
it is a proper sight to behold.
Did you see who's done the illustration for the box?
No.
It's Simon Phipps of Rick Dangerous fame.
Rick from Core Design. Yeah. I'm looking at the box now to see if I can see any. No, I can't. It doesn't call back to anything that he's done before from the looks of it, does it? Yeah. Yeah, it looks like a beauty. I don't know much about the game, do you? It's a sequel to an earlier game.
Yeah.
Do you know much about it?
No, sadly not.
No. It looks like, is it like a kind of first-person space hulky kind of thing, is it?
Yeah, looks like it, yeah.
But it is a sequel, or it may even be the third or fourth in a series. There's plenty of stuff over on the, it's called Black Dawn Technomage, I don't think we said that.
Nope.
It's called, it's developed by a company called Zedsoft, Sean Watters and Tim Gilbert. Now, Tim Gilbert's name rings a bell. Mike Richmond as well is also involved. Yeah, Black Dawn Techno Mage, it's called. There's only going to be 100 of them released, and these things tend not to get
100 special editions with the mouse mat and stuff, and there'll be a standard editions.
This is for a limited collector's edition of 100. Yeah. There will be a standard edition that utilizes the same box, but will not be numbered, and it will not have the mouse mat included. Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
But it's a beauty, isn't it? Brand new big box Amiga games 2022 with all these extras. Fly over to bitmapsoft.co.uk on Friday when this thing releases.
Yes. Looks great.
Like a beauty.
And speaking of new games that are going to be released, you just pointed me in the direction of Goblins 5.
Yes.
Somebody on Discord posted a link that Goblins 5 is being kickstarted, but what's really happening is probably that they're just getting the last bit of money that they need, because I remember them kickstarting this on a French site a year or two ago, French only site, so I didn't understand what was going on. I think actually Raushi posted a link to that back in the day, and it seems now that the game is almost done, but they still need a bit of money to put it out, so they've started a Kickstarter, and I am most definitely gonna back this one.
Even though you didn't like Goblins 4?
I never played it, mate. That's what I said.
Oh, yeah, you didn't. Yeah.
I love the first three games. I adore the first one. The second one, yes, I do still love it. While 95% of it is perfection, the last five is agonizing. I mean, it puzzles so hard and so illogical that you'll be crying and pulling your eyes out.
But that's a shame, isn't it?
It's a bit of a shame, but it's still a great game. I love it. And the third one, I haven't replayed, actually. I've only played it back in the day. I bought the original back in the day. I really enjoyed that. That's more of a traditional point-and-clicker, where the first two are more puzzle games.
Yeah.
So I'm going to replay the third one as well. The fourth one, I bought it. It was released, we just checked, in 2009, so it's a few years ago. And I've actually never played it, so I need to get into that at some point.
But this fifth one,
I'm guessing I have it on Steam, but depends on how I bought it. I forget, mate.
Yeah.
And otherwise, I'll buy it on Good Old Games.
And then there was that spin-off game, wasn't there? What's it called?
That's got nothing. It's got nothing to do with the goblins as such. It's just the same creator. Okay. It's Pierre Chilhode.
So it's not games. A spin-off from Goblins.
No, not as far as I know. But it's got his art style. He's the artist and designer, and he's got this really distinctive art style. He does comics as well with that same style. But Woodruff and the Schnibble of Asimuth. I had that, and I bought that. I still have the original here. It was a CD release, I remember. One of the early CD releases.
Yeah.
So I've actually still got that here. But I remember playing it and getting stuck. And because I was really stubborn back in the day, I didn't want to look at a guide. So I've actually never finished it. So maybe I need to pick that up and finish it and look at a guide if I get stuck.
It might be worth just looking, just that once, just to get you over the little hump.
Yes, but I didn't do that back in the day, Chris. I would never do that.
No, well, it was difficult back then, wasn't it?
Mm.
Now you could just pick up that supercomputer that sits next to you, aka a mobile phone.
Yep.
And look up, hopefully, a pretty inoffensive, spoiler-free hint.
Because
there's lots of websites doing that kind of thing these days.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, it looks nice. I'm going to back it as well. I'm about to embark on a series playthrough of Goblins. I don't know where I'm going to find time for all this stuff, but there are certain games that you just feel like you've got to play. Goblins is definitely a series that
you and I have been talking about doing an episode on Goblins for years. So it'd be good if you dive into them at some point.
Yeah. Hey, mate, and speaking of episodes that we talked about doing for years, but we actually did do this one, Monkey Island.
Yes.
Are you following these Monkey Island Monday reveals that Ron Gilbert is thankfully so still doing?
We just got some tidbits about the new voice actor for LeChuck.
It looked really funny, didn't it? The clip that they released.
Yes. Love that.
Sounds great. I mean, LeChuck has always been brilliantly voice acted, hasn't he? But and this looks like it's going to be no difference. Different actor.
Yeah, different actor, but still really good.
Yeah, so that we haven't got release dates, have we? No.
No.
We haven't.
And I still haven't decided which platform I wanted for, because I wanted for all of them. I wanted on my Switch.
I was going to buy it on every single one.
Yeah.
And it is getting a simultaneous Switch and PC release, I think, isn't it?
So I think for the first time, I've played all of the Monkey Islands on the PC, but for the first time, I may actually pick it up on the Switch.
Yeah,
I want a physical Switch copy, and maybe at some point I'll pick up a PC digital copy as well.
Yeah, I played Thimbleweed Park on the Switch.
Yeah, you did. Okay, I've got that on the PC.
Yeah, it worked really, really well.
Okay.
I think the Switch is a perfect platform for these things. Yeah. And it's great being able to just carry it around with you as well for those eureka moments when you realize, oh, so that's how I do it.
Yes. I mean, that's something I've really learned with the Steam Deck. I mean, a lot of the games that I have now finished, I've had them for years and years. But the fact that it's just turn on and play in a second, it just so makes a huge difference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, especially if you don't have a lot of time for this stuff.
Yeah.
Just being able just to pick it up, switch it on, 15 minutes here and there, makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I swear that's how I've managed to get through 72 hours of Octopath, just because the Switch is just so easy just to dive in just for 10, 15 minutes here and there.
Mm.
You know, rather than having to sit down, fire up the computer, load up Steam, log in, run the game. Yeah. You know, it does. It just much eats easier. Into your time, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Valuable gaming time. Well, should we move on to the patrons, mate?
Yes, let's do something. Oh, you forgot the final piece of news.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Pocky and Rocky reshrined.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was just a little kind of flag because I was reading a review of it today on one of the blogs I follow. I can't remember the name. And this guy was absolutely waxing lyrical about it. Absolutely loves this new Pocky and Rocky game, Pocky and Rocky Reshrined.
Yeah.
So I went on to Metacritic and just seen how it did, and it's doing really well. It's got an 81 average rating on Metacritic.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Did you pick it up?
No, I didn't.
No.
I didn't.
No, I haven't either, but I really must. Because I didn't play masses of Pocky and Rocky when we played it earlier this year.
Okay.
But from what I did play, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. But I feel like I'd like to finish the first one first.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I mean, I'm just looking at the summary of some of the reviews and, more of the same. The original with bells on.
Yep.
So it seems like it's a very faithful.
Okay.
Very faithful follow-up to the original.
Yeah.
It's just so random, wasn't it? I've had it in the game club and then the sequel coming out just a couple of months later.
Yeah. It was a really great game.
Yeah,
the first game I really played or spent a lot of time with on my Mister, because my poor Super Famicom had died.
Yeah. Apparently, it's the 27th best Switch game released this year by review score, which isn't bad.
No, that is pretty damn good.
Given the quality, hey mate, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 came out last week. That has been getting some absolutely incredible reviews. One of the best reviewed JRPGs for a long time now.
Mm.
Just what I need, another 200-hour game in my life.
You can play the first two and then level three.
Well, but you're not just that, is it? Because I'm on Xenosaga. I've played Xenosaga. So I played Xenogears. I've played Xenosaga Episode 1. I've got two more episodes of that to go before I can even start on the Xenoblade series. Come on. Gotta do these things in order.
Yes, of course, mate.
Even though even the Xenoblade Chronicles games aren't linked to one another, never mind the Xenosaga and the Xenoblade Chronicles games.
Yeah.
So I don't know why I do it to myself, but don't know. It just doesn't feel right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Does it?
Patrons. I don't know, mate. I don't know. Yeah, let's thank all those beautiful people who give us a buck here and there so we can keep the lights on here at Retro Asylum Taurus.
Yeah. And yet again, this list has grown since we last recorded only a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Do you want to kick us off?
Yes, I will, with Nick Smith.
And Pete Rogers.
Rune Pete.
New Game Old Flame Podcast.
Christopher Bolton.
Damon Crockett.
Dylan Diark. Not sure I'm saying that right. Alec Plint.
Mike's Retro Tech.
Derek Young.
Dave Velociraptor.
Nick.
Howard Price.
Matthew Turner.
Cy EC.
Adam Hind.
Chris O'Regan.
Who just released his episode number 400 of The Sausage Factory.
400.
Impressive. So many interviews. If you don't know, listeners, Chris O'Regan has, he's releasing them under the Kane and Rince banner these days, isn't he? but has for many, many years run this podcast where he interviews mostly smaller developers, but sometimes some of the big ones as well. I remember listening to a Charles Cecil interview, for example.
And he's done a couple with Inkle.
Yeah, yeah. So he interviews developers or designers or people who make games. And he's been doing that for now for 400 episodes. I think I haven't listened to it myself, but this is about The Sausage Factory. So the 399 of them will be interviews, and this one will be something where you see how The Sausage Factory is made.
Yeah, it's quite clever. So one of the guys who we interviewed a few weeks ago, obviously he was someone we got on with really well, and they agreed to interview him about the podcast.
Mm.
So it's really cool. So it's Chris being interviewed by one of his past guests.
Nice.
And it's really good. And, you know, he quietly puts out these podcasts every single week. And I know from speaking to him that he records two or three of these things a week. So he's constantly got a massive backlog ready to.
Yeah.
I mean, the man is insatiable.
Yes.
Just to keep the enthusiasm going for that long.
Mm. Yeah, it's crazy
His podcast is now retro.
He's been doing this by himself for all these years, for 400 episodes. And it's great quality content, so you should really check it out if you have any interest in indie games, for example, because he's had so many interviews with developers of indie games.
Yeah. Give it a listen.
And Chris is good people, so give it a listen.
Yeah, we do like Chris.
Yes. So I'm going to continue here. James Dunn.
Hans Crombane.
Raushi MSX.
Gito Threadbare.
Chris Atwell.
Axeman.
That sounds dangerous.
It does.
Harvey Watson.
Martin Jones.
Ninjixel.
Tim TJ Walker.
Ricardo Engel.
Heavy Metal Don.
James Bentley.
Tony Parkinson.
Gaz H.
Mal Woods.
Red Crested Beak Breagle.
Kane and Rince Podcast.
Lampton Worm.
Salvio Calabrese.
Mitsuyama.
Reese Wynn.
Clint Humphrey.
Mark Billund.
Paul Ashton.
Chris Rowe.
John Shepard.
Laurent Giroux.
Deadlock.
Aaron Maupin.
Jim Orbitz IT.
Thomas Goffin.
Andy Marsh.
Patrick Fust.
Lauren.
Andrew Gilmore.
Stephen Stoddard.
Matt Sullivan.
Darren Coles.
Gary Heather.
Edward Fitzpatrick.
Nick Lees.
And Blake Brett.
Good people, all of them.
Yes, thanks a lot, you guys.
Much appreciated. Thank you very much.
And now, time for something completely different. Let's actually talk about the game that we're supposed to be talking about in this episode.
Yes.
Devil May Cry. So, as listeners will remember, maybe 4 or 5 episodes ago, I chose Day of the Tentacle because Chris had never played that before. So I chose one of the greatest point-and-click adventure games ever made for him to enjoy. And Chris wanted to return the favor, so he made me play Devil May Cry.
I chose one of the best action-adventure games ever made. Did I not?
Not. But let's hear a little bit about the game first, because I know you've got this all prepared, because this is your game, mate.
It's my game. So, Devil May Cry. It's a very, very famous game developed and published by Capcom.
You see, listeners, how he's trying to build his case here.
I don't need to build my case. This is one of the best review video games of all time. I don't need to build my case. Many, many better people have done that before. I've got issues with the game, which we can come on to. And there is definitely isn't a game that has aged wonderfully. But mate, 21 years old, that makes me feel very old, almost to the day it was released on August the 23rd, 2001, worldwide. That makes me feel very, very old, because I remember in those early days, relatively early days of the PS2, looking at these previews and thinking, wow, it looks like Resi, but it looks doesn't, and it's so much better than that. It's now old, 21 years. It launched the series that continues today. What is it? It is a. It's always just difficult to quantify. It's a what we would now call a hack and slash game, I suppose. It's an action adventure. Think some of the games that it preceded, and probably wouldn't have existed if it wasn't for Devil May Cry. Things like God of War, Bayonetta, Fury, and lots of others. Before Devil May Cry, we didn't really have these 3D open-ish, come on to maybe whether how open it is, but in an open environment with many, many different ways in which to engage your enemies. The game is all about fast-paced combat. There are very, very few other elements to the game. There are some very light exploration. There's some very, very light, I loathe to even call them puzzles.
There are no puzzles in this game, maybe.
Because they're not really puzzles. There's some very light exploration and puzzle elements to it. But this is it's a balls to the wall, flat out action adventure game with the emphasis very much on action.
Unless you want to call wandering around getting lost because stuff isn't signposted enough, and if you want to call that puzzles, then there are some puzzles. Apart from that, there are no puzzles in this game.
Well, we will come on to some of the mechanics, but the development of this game is really interesting because it was directed by a guy called Hideki Kamiya. And Kamiya had previously worked on Resident Evil 2, and some other earlier Capcom games. He was producing the next generation Resident Evil game following Resident Evil 3, which was rather rushed out after Resi 2 before the end of the PS1 life. The next big installment in the Resi franchise was to be Resi 4. And Kamiya had started to work on that. And he wanted to do things slightly different. So he felt like the traditional Resi formula was a bit staid. So he wanted to produce something which was a bit more flashy and a bit more action-driven. So he started to produce the game that would become Devil May Cry. And as he did so, the scenario of Devil May Cry largely didn't change. A lot of the characters, it wasn't Dante, it was a guy called Tony, and it wasn't Trish, it was another lady. And it was in typical Resi fashion, there was loose ties to Wesker and all that crew. As development went on, and the more Shinji Mikami and other guys within Capcom, they became increasingly concerned that this wasn't really a Resi game, and that it was moving away from the Resi from the Resi style more and more. And eventually, they convinced Kamiya, they convinced Kamiya that actually his product, Devil May Cry, or it wasn't called Devil May Cry at that stage, but his product, what he was producing, would be better off standing on its own and being a completely new IP. In the end, Kamiya gave in and he agreed to produce it. He changed the name of the team to Team Little Devils, and they came up with this idea of producing a game based on Dante Alighieri's poem, The Divine Comedy. Which chronicles a journey through the various stages of hell, and they called it, inspired by that, they called it Devil May Cry, and that's how the game came to pass. Very much influenced, apparently, by Strider, and that was the game which he says that he wanted to capture the feel of, which is interesting. Dante.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't see that at all.
No, that's it. I was reading an interview with him, and that's the vibe he tried to capture.
Okay.
Dante himself very much inspired by the look of its time with his silver hair and long red trench coat. He's very much got that late 90s, early noughties kind of emo, goth, cool look, hasn't he? A lot of the graphics in the game are those gothic kind of castles and gothic cliffs, stormlash cliffs and stuff like that, and in walks Dante with his long coat and his silver billowing hair and his big guns, and it's very much of its time. Apparently Dante himself is based on a character from the manga series Cobra, which I know nothing about, a character called Boichi Terasawa, who was had this kind of devil may care attitude but was really cool. The game strives for coolness. What we perceive as cool now as two fellas in our 40s in 2022 is be difficult to judge, but that's what the game is going for. Very, very cool, very stylish, action, a game that was probably just as much fun to watch someone play as it is to play. That was the idea. In terms of the way Dante's animated and the way he moves around and the way he engages enemies. And just one final point on the development, which I think is really cool. I loved anything that was Resi-based back in the day. I absolutely loved. I loved Dino Crisis, which the game hasn't aged terribly well. And Onimusha Warlords was a game on the PS2, early PS2 game that I absolutely loved. It's basically Resi, but set in a Shogun Japanese setting. Mm. And one of the inspirations for a lot of Devil May Cry's combat, and to really get the most out of the combos, you have to use this move. It's called the air time or hang time, or where you scoop the enemies up into the air and then you can do various things with them. You can use your guns or you can do various combos with them in the air. And that came from a bug in Onimusha where you weren't supposed to be able to juggle enemies, but if you just caught the enemy with the right move at the right time, you could juggle them in the air just like you can in Devil May Cry. Mm. And when the team seen somebody, I think somebody realised there was this bug after release and said, oh God, we shouldn't have left that in. And Kamiya said, this is brilliant. Why don't we make a game based around this mechanic and this idea of stringing together combos and different enemies? And that's where a lot of the influence for the style of gameplay came in.
Okay.
So has that changed your opinion at all on the game?
Nope. Not even a little.
So we'll get into some of the gameplay mechanics at the moment, because this game is all about gameplay. Just a very word, plot.
There is none.
Do you have any idea what's going on?
Let me see. I beat up puppets. I wander around. I get lost in a mansion. I don't know how to get out, so I need to find a way to get out. That's pretty much it. I'm finding my way out of there. Oh, and this hot chick that almost kills me in the intro.
Is she hot?
She poses as, well, she's wearing this skin-tight leather suit, so I'm supposing that she's supposed to be hot. But she is, I mean, it's so obvious from the get-go that she's actually the bad guy, but we don't know that as the character we're playing, so we are kind of running a... We are led to this castle or mansion. We're going in there, and then we're trying to get out again.
Did you complete it?
No, I didn't. We'll get into that. I did my best. Let's before we get to this. Then this, listeners, is a 6-hour game. That's how Chris put it. This is a
how long
6-hour
game. Says?
He says, he said to me, Mass, this is a short one. You're going to love this. It's just a 6-hour game. No worries at all. So this is a 6-hour game in the same way that Ghosts and Goblins is a 15-minute game, mate. Because I'm sure it's a 6-hour game if you're brilliant at it and you've played it before and you know just what you're doing. And by the way, you know where you're going. We'll get to that later on, because I spent some of these missions that were supposed to be solved in 2 minutes, I spent hours on, because it is so badly signposted, and if you jump a pixel too early, you won't see where you're supposed to be going. But we'll get to that later on.
There's one instance of that. There is one instance of what you're talking about.
No. I got lost like that at least 3 or 4 times.
At least you should not have got lost, because the game in it is not big.
And I spent so much time running around, fighting, respawning enemies that were so pointless, I wanted to puke. Yeah, and that really, really killed the enjoyment of this game for me. But no, it isn't a 6-hour game. I spent about 20, 22 hours, and I haven't finished it. So that's where I'm at.
But let's talk about some of the mistakes then that you made.
Yes.
Because
yes.
You didn't really care for collecting the red orbs, did you, which are the currency in the game, which allow you to upgrade your weapons and
skills?
I didn't really
I tried to collect all of the red orbs. The problem was, and I didn't know this until too late when my save game was at mission 18 or something like that,
you kept spending them on items.
I spent them on items because I thought Chris told me this was a 6-hour game, and I want to get through it because I don't have that much time to play. So I'm going to buy those, what are they, yellow or blue orbs that means you can actually have one more go. It's a life, really. You get another life, so you don't need to start over and reload from a save point, because I was playing this on real hardware, so reloading from a save point would take me 2 minutes, I think, something like that. It needed to access the memory card a few times and so on and so forth. So I thought, I'm going to buy these things. And that meant I wasn't spending all of my money upgrading the weapons instead. Mm. So I got to a point where I think at mission 18, something like that, I gave up. There was no way in hell.
You would have been woefully underpowered at that point.
Yes, there was no way in hell I was gonna beat that boss. But I persevered because I'm stubborn as I am. And I actually picked up the game again a few days later. I beat that boss. But only by using, you get these special, I forget what they're called right now, but you've got these items, more items. I use items that would hurt it.
It's tears, holy water.
Holy water. And other stuff. I used items a lot to beat that boss. And I thought, now I'm going to beat the game, or at least see the end boss. I got 3 missions further in, and in mission 21, you meet the same boss again for the 3rd time, by the way, and it's such a boring boss, for f**k's sake, it's boring.
So this is Nightmare, yeah?
Yes.
The big goopy thing on the floor.
This is when I put down my controller and decided never, ever to pop in Devil May Cry again, because that really soured it for me. I was so happy. I finally got past him the 2nd time. Let's see the rest of this game. And there he is again. All the other bosses, by the way, I've beat with no problem at all. But this guy, when you're underpowered, it's so hard. But yeah, I spent my red orbs on items because I thought I would just buy lives and try to get through this. I did spend some red orbs on upgrading the weapons, but definitely not enough. So I was woefully underpowered. And I mean, this is an old game, but this isn't an old game. I mean, this is hardly retro. So I would have loved just a tiny bit of tutorializing.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
Or maybe signposting or something like that. Maybe I made a mistake by not reading the manual, because I didn't before I got into the game. Because, I mean, I hate the fact that I've spent so many hours playing this game and got to an unwinnable state and also spent so many hours before I even figured out how to use some of the basic attacks, how to use the guns probably, and so on and so forth. You need to discover that for yourself.
I mean, the manual doesn't even really tell you that. I mean, in researching for this podcast, I found that there's this move called the 100-hand slap.
Okay.
Which you can do from minute one.
Okay.
And actually, the amount of basic sword attacks that you can do without even upgrading or without finding any of the special swords is incredible. There's about 4 or 5 different combos that you can do. And one of them gives you a combo of, it's called the 100-hand slash, and it gives you a combo of 20 moves straight away, which would automatically get you into stylish rank. Let's just talk about the way the game's structured.
This ties into my not liking one versus one fighters. I don't like having to try to figure out special moves in a fighting game.
Yeah,
I like if it's somehow taught to me and it's hard to master and you need to learn how to use it. But finding out by randomly pressing buttons is really not my idea of fun.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to it, I don't think it's a case of you just randomly press buttons. I think it's about how you experiment with the one, because really you only have one button to attack. And it's not like you have a different combinations of different types of attack. You essentially have one button to attack, and how you, the different combinations of that button with various moves on the analog stick.
You have your sword, or later on that gauntlet and your gun, and you have different
guns. Yeah, you have your gun, which will give you so you've got one button for melee attack and one button for a gunshot.
And some stuff you need to be doing while jumping, so still there are 3 buttons you can combine now.
Yeah, and then you can jump. You jump with triangle, which takes a bit of getting used to.
Yeah.
And then you can combine it with that, but just with the basic sword attack. And I think where this game really does shine is that there's so much depth in the combat. There's so much you can experiment with. And by the end of the game, when you've got your Alastor sword and you've got your Ifrit gauntlets and you've probably got four or five different guns, and you've got your Sparda sword, which actually doesn't give you a whole lot more than the original Alastor sword. The way you approach the combat encounters can be very, very different. And the game really leans into this when it gets to Devil May Cry, because it gives you different styles. You can actually specialise in a particular style. But in Devil May Cry 1, I think where the game does shine, the whole game is just a series of one combat encounter after the other. Now, whether you think they're particularly well designed, you know, your mileage is going to vary with that. You clearly didn't. I think some are. I think some aren't. But what the game, I think, where it really does shine is that it gives you these tools, it gives you these enemies, and it says, right, you decide how you want to beat them up. And the more varied you are and the less damage you take, and the quicker you can do it, you're going to get rewarded. Because if you can do it without getting hit, and if you can do it in a varied way, we'll give you a whole load more red orbs if you can get your ranking.
That's actually the wrong way of going around making an enjoyable game, then. Because that means if you're good from the get-go, you get to get better and stronger. But if you're bad, you just never get a chance in this game.
Yeah, but I think the game does allow you to scale the difficulties, because the game is really difficult. There's no doubt about it.
Let's talk about that as well. At some point, I decided this game is no fun, but I want to see the end of it. So I want to go on easy mode.
Yeah, you only get one chance.
No, nobody ever asked me to go on easy mode.
To trigger easy mode, I've got the things that the criteria here. So to get offered easy automatic mode, you either have to use a vital star in mission one, and the vital star is the thing which
heals you completely.
Yeah, heals you. So you have to either use a heal in mission one, or use a yellow orb to have another go.
Okay, so because mission 1 to 5 isn't difficult.
In missions 1 through 3. If you use a yellow orb in the first 3 missions, you get offered easy automatic mode. Yeah.
So I was never offered easy. And when I wanted it, was about mission 16, 17, where I thought, this isn't any fun. I'm not having fun trying to get through this game. Let me just get easy mode so I can just see what's actually there.
Start again.
Yeah, and at that point, I painted myself into a corner. I've made this game unwinnable by the way I've played it.
Yeah, for all me immortals, I mean, like anything in this, there are people on YouTube who will go through this game without upgrading one thing, without you losing one item, and without taking a hit, and that's on the Dante Must Die mode. But for most normal people, if you've got to the point where you're level 18 and you're underpowered, it's probably game over.
Yeah. But I love the fact, as you said, that some people can actually do it, because that means it is a skill-based game. I'm just not skilled enough.
Well, I think it's a question of how much time you're willing to put in, isn't it? The easy automatic mode makes a big difference, because in easy automatic mode, all guns have rapid fire. There is just one action button which automatically selects melee or gun attacks depending on how close you are to enemies.
Okay.
And then there's this other rolling slash move that pretty much breaks the game.
Okay.
Oh no, I'm too late.
Missed the boat on a game? Don't worry, the Playthrough Podcast are bringing it back. Cruise over to the website at playthroughpod.com for episodes and links to our Discord, Twitter and more. Play along with Playthrough and be part of the conversation.
We're back after a short break there. Now, Mads, let's talk about the structure of the game.
Yes.
Because I think this is one of the things that caused you some of your issues, was getting stuck in various places. So the way I see this, the game is mission-based. right?
Yep.
So you play from missions 1 to 24, and each mission has a pretty mundane objective, doesn't it? It might be find X mirror or put X mirror onto a pedestal. It's pretty, there are, you know, there's no kind of grand missions here. Each of the game, it's basically the game breaks the whole thing down into a series of objectives.
Yep.
And all the missions do, as I see it, is give you an opportunity to save your game, stock up on items, spend your orbs. They basically act like, the mission breaks act like checkpoints rather than a typical mission. Do you agree?
Yes, mostly because this is kind of like an open world game, because yeah, the entire world is open to you in every mission. Well, these part, the parts that you can reach, sometimes you'll be, they'll be gated, but most of the time you can reach the entire world that you've opened so far in a mission. So the missions kind of don't make sense. They should have just placed like safe spots. Like they've got these places where you can shop.
Yeah.
In the world, they should have just placed safe spots there and would have made it more more engaging somehow narratively.
I mean, I'm mixed on the mission structure, because in some ways I quite like the fact it gives you a sense of your progress all the time. Some of these missions, I mean, unless you get lost, some of the missions are only 10 minutes long.
Some are 5 minutes. Some are 2 minutes.
And so I think the longest I spent on one, if you don't count the fact that you get stuck on a boss and have to replay it, probably about 40 minutes, I would say. 30 to 40 minutes are the real longest ones.
Yes.
But it is the one bit that really did cause me frustration. There was one boss, remember the sewers?
Yeah.
Where you face a death scythe at the end.
Mm.
So that mission, that boss beat me more times than any other boss.
Okay.
Now, I reckon the mission to get up to that boss is probably no more than 10 minutes, especially when you've played it about 15 times. Yes. You can kind of get through it pretty quickly. But playing that same 10 minutes of game over and over and over again just to get up to the boss, just to die again, That I mean, even for me, and I like this game. I don't love it, probably like I did, and with my rose-tinted spectacles on, I did back in the day. But I like it. But even that really did start to frustrate me.
So that happened to me a lot of times as well, having to play the same 10 minutes over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And again, with the complete lack of any kind of hinting, signposting, telling me, what am I supposed to do here? I stupidly died on the lion a few times, like
ten
times. Yeah, because I didn't realize that you need to shoot first, and then it goes into another stage, and then you need to melee it, and then you need to shoot it, and so on. And once I knew how to deal with it, it was easy. But having to play the same 10 minutes to get there to fail 10 times, that was infuriating.
But you did find the enemy kind of codex bestiary in your inventory, didn't you?
I guess I did. I actually,
because
don't know.
That tells you how when you've encountered an enemy, and bosses are included. So when you've got to an enemy and you've died or you've beaten the enemy, it basically gives you the strategy on how to beat them.
Yeah. Okay.
But there are, I mean, it doesn't give you everything. So, for instance, I mean, this is where the game does give you something. So,
okay.
It may well be, let's say, for instance, that lion boss. It may well be that within the bestiary section on that. How do you pronounce that? Bestiary? Bestiary?
Yeah, bestiary.
I mean. Yeah. Within that section of the menu, it may well be that that particular enemy has 8 entries that you can possibly unlock.
Mm.
And by getting to it once, you may unlock 2 of them.
Oh, right. I did see that, yes.
Yeah, and then the more times you go up against it, because you go up against that enemy throughout the game probably a dozen times.
Yeah.
Every time you face it, you will unlock another couple of entries to the point where you end up getting it filled. But the first time you got to it, if you got to it and died, you would have that enemy then in your bestiary. and then you would, it would give you at least a couple of clues on the strategy on how to beat it. But I mean, the likes of that is a good example of how I think the game does its designs well, because you come up against that kind of enemy, and I died a good few times, and you almost have to work out for yourself what the mechanics are or what the pattern is or what the strategy is. But when you do and you get it down, it actually doesn't really pose that much of a problem.
For some enemies, yes. Not all of them.
No, some of them are difficult. Like the guy, the big guy, the Nilo Angelo.
Yeah.
The big swordsman, he caused me a lot of problems on every single time I faced him.
Yeah, me too.
What was your general...
And the nightmare, of course.
The nightmare. Yeah, nightmare is a big kind of a massive energy, really, isn't it? That you have to... every now and again, its core exposes. And you have to just wail away at it for as long as you can. And then did you get sucked into nightmare as well?
I did. That's the easiest part. When you do that, you can fight inside the nightmare, get out, and then it'll actually get a lot of damage. But it would always kill me just when I was on the outside instead with the three, four different attacks it made.
And some of the attacks do a lot, because as you alluded to earlier, there's no concept of lives here. You have a health bar, and once that health bar is depleted, if you don't have a yellow orb, which essentially gives you a life, gives you another chance, and you're out of healing items, it is back to the previous mission.
And even
interlude,
that yellow orb just gives you another life. That means starting over in this level anyway. You need to start over the boss fight. You can't start from the middle of the boss fight.
No. You'd have to start. Yeah, but you'd have to start from the beginning of the boss fight. But you don't have to go back to the start of the mission.
No. There's this kind of checkpoint system that you're spawned back to a kind of a checkpoint just before the boss fight.
Yeah, it's only the vital star that will replenish your energy.
Yes.
And give you a chance to kind of essentially have another health bar at the the boss.
But I think the simple conclusion here is just I'm a shit game player.
Clearly
this is not a game for me. So, I really threw myself at this. I wanted to finish it. I wanted to beat it, but I couldn't. I just couldn't. And I couldn't bring myself to have even just half a battle against that nightmare once more. And what's even worse is that the third time you fight it, there's a 5 to 8 minute run through of the level before you get to the fight every single time.
That is frustrating,
which just kills it completely for me.
I do hear you on that. I mean, and I agree. I did find that frustrating. That battle in the sewer, I mean, literally probably a dozen times. Yeah. Of going through that section of the sewers, and you know, and the problem was
swimming sections. Let's talk.
Oh, the swimming sections are terrible. Let's talk about some of the really weird sections in a minute, because there's a couple. There's an on-rail shooter section as well towards the end of the game that you probably didn't see, which is just really bizarre.
So I got to mission 21, I think. So
you were there.
Two missions.
There. I mean, you basically had that last nightmare, a couple of build-up levels, and the final boss. The final boss is terrible.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really, really not fun. Look, tell me, you must have enjoyed something about it. Like, what about the moment-to-moment combat just against the regular enemies? Was there anything there that... you spend 20 hours, you say, playing it. You must have enjoyed part of it.
So I did. I like the feel of the place that you were in. I kept comparing it to a game that I actually like, which is Alone in the Dark, because it felt a lot like that mansion you're in Alone in the Dark, with the kind of monsters that you were facing. And even though the puzzles were really, really simple, I like the progression of, I see this place, I wonder what I need to do with that. And then 5-10 hours later, now I've got a key so I can actually open this place and go somewhere else. And I like that exploration.
You can survival horror roots, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. But what destroyed it completely, what would have actually fixed this game for me, apart from maybe making it easier to grind later on. I would have been happy to grind if it was possible to just grind some of these levels to get stronger to finish it. That would have been beautiful. But what would have been the best part would have been if the monsters weren't respawning. Because I liked running around this huge castle and the grounds outside, and there's so many places to look and where you could find bonuses and extra stuff, and I really liked that part. But the fact that whenever I went out into the courtyard, there'd be five of those like Grim Reapers flying around every time. I need to fight these guys every single time. And if I, by accident, which you actually do quite often, go into another section of the screen and then go back again, they'll be back. So sometimes I'll be in a fight. I would have killed four out of five enemies, and by accident, I would go into the next section, and then I need to go back and kill five enemies again with the life I had left. So if they had just made these enemies non-respawning, that would have made the game 100% better for me, definitely, because I like the exploration part. I like the part where this was actually an open world. And I liked seeing how I could unlock different parts of this world step by step by doing different fights and getting items and so on and so forth. That was actually really good. The combat, for some enemies I appreciated it, definitely. But I mean, this was just so... I enjoy the God of War games. I'm pretty good at those games, but they are easy games, I guess. This was just far removed from that. It was nowhere near as good as that. But I definitely liked some of it. I think I just soured on it quite quickly because of the respawning enemies. So after you beat the first 357 of those puppets...
Marionettes, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of becomes boring that whenever you enter a room, there are 10 of them. And they're just annoying because I just wanted to go over there, but now I need to fight all these guys. And if you try to run past stuff, then the fact that your energy doesn't replenish itself and you, I mean...
Only if you're in Devil Trigger mode.
Yes, exactly. And you've got, and you need to build up to get, you need to fight to get into Devil Trigger mode.
Yeah.
So that's not a cheap way of getting extra life. So trying to discover the environment to see what was there is something that will slowly kill you almost no matter what you do, unless you're a lot better at that fighting mechanic than I am, because then I guess you could use Devil Trigger mode, just fight, never get hurt, and use Devil Trigger mode to replenish your health. But it just made it impossible to actually explore because of all the respawning enemies. And the enemies, I mean, apart from the marionettes, none of them are actually easy to dispatch of. I mean, they are always a challenge in some way.
Yeah, I mean, until you start to really power up, and then a lot of those enemies don't really pose, which obviously presents its own problems when the enemies don't feel like a challenge and they feel like fodder.
Okay.
It's very difficult, I imagine, if you're designing a game like this to find the ultimate, particularly if you are going for difficulty, which they unapologetically were. This game was meant to be hard, and they knew it would turn off. Yeah, a little bit like when we played Maximo, which I think is a much better game, by the way.
Oh, yes, brilliant game.
But even, remember we were talking about the developers and how we criticised them a little bit for a little bit of gatekeeping with the difficulty and saying, oh, we want to...
That's a kid's game compared to this.
Yeah, they're very different games.
Difficulty-wise... That you was not really... a difficult game compared to this, if you ask me.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. But they are games that are both known for being difficult. But they are very, very different games.
Yeah.
But the point I was making was that Kamiya, if you read interviews with him, he doesn't come across brilliantly because he talks about wanting to almost exclude the casual gamer from playing.
Yeah.
Which I think is never, ever a very good design philosophy. If you're going into designing a game and you're thinking to yourself, one of my purposes of designing this is to exclude a certain section of game player, it's only going to lead you one way, and that is to frustrate those who you are probably trying to attract.
Yeah.
I think listening to you talking there about, you know, wanting to explore, I think there was a couple of comments when you mentioned that in Discord, and I think maybe John V as well said you shouldn't be hanging around long enough to have the enemies respawn, because the enemies will respawn within an area without you even leaving and going back to it if you hang around long enough.
Okay, I never did that. It was always when you left the area, but that was just because
they will always
exploring.
Be back. Yeah, yeah.
And that was so extremely annoying. And I mean, the reason that it really annoyed me was probably that I did enjoy the minute to minute gameplay. I wanted to get through this game. I actually wanted to see what was there, and I liked running down a corridor and killing all the marionettes the first time and the second time and probably the third time as well. And I wanted to see this this environment. I wanted to, even though it was really nonsensical, I wanted to get through the narrative. I wanted to I mean, the puzzles, the whatever was happening there, I wanted to see that, and I liked the environment. But it was just completely destroyed by respawning enemies that I had to battle over and over again, and bosses that I would die at and then had to fight through the same, I mean, boring parts of the level because they were easy for 10 minutes and try again and die, and then 10 minutes, try, die, 10 minutes, try, die. It became unbearable. I mean, I've rarely been so angry at a game as I've been at Devil May Cry, and I really wanted to beat it.
Yeah, I think you've got to really, really like the moment-to-moment combat, the regular combat.
But how can you like that after 20 hours? After 20 hours,
shouldn't be playing it for 20 hours.
Well, that's because I'm crap at it, I guess.
No, it's not because you're a crap gamer. And clearly it didn't gel with you, obviously, and that's absolutely fine. But is it? Yeah, I mean, I think I probably was around 10 hours, and I did get stuck on most bosses. Took multiple goes, and I got lucky
Getting stuck. One of the missions that is supposed to take, actually, this wasn't even a mission. There's a little interlude between two missions that's supposed
mission
to take
eight, isn't it, I think.
Something along 30 seconds. I mean, you run out a door, you jump over a chasm, you run to another door. It's supposed to take about 30 seconds. That took me a bit more than an hour.
Yeah, I know exactly what
there are some magic jumps that you need to do. So if you jump from a ledge, you can only go this far. This is a special amount of distance that you can actually cross. But for some ledges, if you go all the way to the end, you won't fall off. And then you can press jump. And then he'll, by magic, jump three or four times as long as he's actually supposed to be able to do. I didn't see that. So I thought, so how am I ever going to get over there? I need to go somewhere else, I guess. I tried once or twice jumping onto a chandelier to see if I could actually get there, and failed, of course. When you fall down, there's a, I'd like to say, 12 to 15 minute run to get back to the same freaking part you were jumping from.
How many marionettes did you kill in that little time as well? Because there's loads down there, isn't there?
A million. And for f***'s sake, this was so annoying. And when I got it in the end, I didn't say, ah, yes, I got it. I said, this was what I was supposed to be doing for... I was angry at this game. And then later on, again, as I said before, had I at the very least been able to farm... I mean, we've got respawning enemies. Make me able to farm for upgrades later on so I can actually get through the game. Because when I was at mission 18, 19, 20, something along those lines, I knew I was underpowered. There's something wrong here. I've broken the game in some way. So I tried to run up and down that corridor, killing all of the marionettes. You only get proper red orbs for them the first time. The next time, they drop very little. The third time, almost none.
Yeah.
So there was no way for me to farm this game. Could I have at least... I would have gladly spent 2 hours walking up and down that corridor, killing boring marionettes, if that could have given me 20,000 red orbs so I can actually invest in upgrading my equipment and get through this game. But that wasn't possible either.
Yeah. I mean, I know what you mean. There is definitely, with the respawning enemies, there is a diminishing returns on the red orbs, definitely. But the real way to farm red orbs is to find the most stylish way to kill them, because you can get about 6,000 red orbs if you can get through a level with an S rank, which is difficult.
I did that once or twice. Yeah.
I never got an S rank. I got an A on a couple, but never an S. If you can, you will get 6,000 bonus red orbs. And the amount of red orbs that you get for just killing the regular enemies goes up exponentially if you can get a stylish and maintain your stylish rank in combat.
I feel certain I got a single or maybe twice got the S, but I can't have it if you say it gives that many red orbs. So, yeah, so maybe I'm 6, just misremembering. 000, yeah, okay.
6,000 bonus orbs.
But again, I find that to be, it's as backwards. I mean, that's not how you're supposed to design the game, because that is making it easier for the people who are good at it.
Yeah, you're punishing the unskilled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you're just making it easier for the people who don't need it to be easier, and keeping it impossible for noobs like me.
Yeah, and of course with the really skilled people, they're what they want. They want to get the game modes that unlock when you beat the game on normal. So you unlock a hard mode.
Yes.
And if you beat that, you unlock the Dante Must Die mode.
Mm.
And in Dante Must Die, the enemies can use a devil trigger.
Okay.
So the enemies can make themselves, if they sustain enough damage or do enough damage, they can activate their own devil trigger, which obviously in devil trigger mode, you become faster, stronger, and you get access to special moves.
Yeah.
So that gives, again, but that's where the real skilled people, that's where they want to be. They want to be in that ultra hard. I did contemplate playing it or trying at least the first few missions in hard mode, but haven't got through it to the end. I still think this is I think it's a very influential game. I can see that, but I still enjoy the actual game as well, but I didn't enjoy it enough to start it again on hard mode. Were you a gauntlets man? Were you an Ifrit gauntlets man, or were you a sword man?
Gauntlets.
Yeah, me too.
I enjoyed those.
Yeah, punching the living daylights out of stuff.
Yeah.
It is easier to get stylish ranks in combat with the sword, apparently. Okay. You've got more options with the sword because you can use the flip them up in the air. Getting the enemies into that state is really, if you can then switch to your Ifrit gauntlets, because trying to just stick up for this game a little bit and talking about the things that I enjoyed, just the amount of variety in combat, you can, in the blink of an eye, you can switch from your Alistar sword to your Ifrit gauntlets. So you can, in one...
How do you do that? Because I would have to press start and go in and switch, and it would take forever.
Is it L3 or R3? One of the push buttons on the stick.
Okay, never knew. Again, this game doesn't teach you anything. So.
Well, that is in the manual, to be fair.
Yes.
That is in the manual. No, the game it certainly doesn't hold your hand. But
this is a game from an age. I mean, as I said in the beginning, this isn't really a retro game. I mean, we're talking kind of modern gaming here in a PS2.
God of War is exactly the same, though. I mean, if you play the original God of War, that doesn't teach you anything about its mechanics. You have to read the manual or figure it out for yourself.
Really?
Yeah. And I never read the manual for that, and I
had no problem with it.
Yeah. The one thing, I'm going to criticize it a little bit, is there is this 1,000 slap thing that I was talking about earlier, that this 1,000 hand slash, that I didn't know that, and that isn't in the manual, and I played the game right through to completion. I never knew that there was this sword combo. And I was watching a YouTube video last night of someone talking about how to maintain the stylish rank, you know, throughout combat. And basically they were saying that if you don't use this 100-hand slash, then you're not going to really get stylish combos, especially in the early game before you start to unlock the special moves. Okay. So that again goes back to your criticism that actually the game isn't friendly enough probably to people coming at it afresh.
No.
I accept that as a criticism of it for sure. But I still maintain that when you do unlock some of the extra moves, and when you do unlock the Ifrit gauntlets, which happens probably around mission 10, then the amount of variety in the combat, for me anyway, kept it fresh enough. With the ability to trigger the devil trigger mode, and then the special moves there. You know, you could go into one encounter and you can start with your sword, you can whip them in the air, you can flip to your gauntlets, you can be doing kicks and punches with that. You can then pull out your shotgun, and then within the blink of an eye, you've killed something which a couple of hours ago was causing you no end of trouble. Or you could just approach it and say, well, I think Raushi played it in this way. I'm just predominantly going to use the sword and I won't use the gauntlets and I'll adapt my playstyle that way. Or you could say, well, I've got a nice selection of guns. At one point, you get a grenade gun, which is quite powerful. You know, you might say, well, I'm just going to keep my distance and I'm just going to predominantly use the guns. The game allows you, I think, that kind of experimentation.
It doesn't really, because if you, for example, use the grenade gun, you get the lowest rank possible and the lowest number of red orbs.
That means if you only use the grenade gun, you can't actually get through it.
Yeah.
No. If you only use the grenade gun, yeah. But what the game wants you to do is be as flashy and as flamboyant and as varied as you can. And it will reward you for being as varied
as you can. And I'm sure I would have thought that would have been funny if it had taught me that that's what it wanted.
Well, it kind of gives you the rank, doesn't it, starting from dull going up to stylus. So it is telling you when you are in combat. Look,
again,
you
maybe I'm just stupid. I didn't know that that was... I didn't know that that was how I was going to get a lot of red orbs and actually get to upgrade my stuff.
You got to read the manual, mate.
Yes, I know. I know, mate. I know.
You got to read the manual. You know, remember when games had these paper things in the boxes?
After I figured out that I failed this game, I started over because, I mean, hadn't it been for this podcast, I would have stopped playing this game a few hours in. But I really wanted to get through it. But after playing again the first 5-6 missions and just the first time I lost to some boss, I just couldn't. I just couldn't load a save game and say, okay, I'm going to try again. It was over. I knew I was beat at that point. But I did try again, and I did get some better rankings, and I did actually get some of the weapons upgraded. But I think probably the first time I met the Nightmare again, I thought, nah, I don't
want
this.
So you played it again just for the swimming sections, didn't you, really?
Yes, the swimming is brilliant. That's really
The swimming is a special kind of brilliance, isn't it?
Yes.
What were they thinking with those swimming sections?
Yeah, actually, I don't hate them. I thought they were okay. The only thing that annoyed me about some of the swimming sections were that part that I did a million times to get to the Nightmare in Mission 18, where you enter a room and there are three of those flying Grim Reapers.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'd be at the other end of the room and you'd be able to dispatch of them without getting hit. Other times they'll be standing right atop of you when you got into the room and you get hit a number of times, which meant that you for sure wouldn't get through the boss battle because you really needed your health and there was no way to replenish your health before the boss battle.
Yeah.
That annoyed me a lot. But
some of the enemies do drop green orbs, right? So there are...
Yes, but none of those there in that part.
Yeah, I mean, the swimming sections are completely brainless because they're not even difficult.
No,
you get these versions of these scythe enemies, don't you, underwater? But you essentially just lock on, hold the fire button with it, and you have a needle gun, and you just hold it down until the things die.
Yep.
And it's really difficult to orient yourself. It's not good. And then there's another section which you wouldn't have seen, which precedes the final. So it's part of the final boss, which is pretty dumb in and of itself. I mean, you would not have enjoyed the final boss, but the first part of the final boss, it turns into a really poor version of Panzer Dragoon.
Okay.
It's really, really strange. Like, you get this, like, it's not done an on-rails shooter before, and I haven't played it for 10 hours, you know, the final boss, and instead of, you know, like... Yeah, I don't like boss battles, but if you're going to do a boss battle, the way I would do it is a player's got to the end of the game, has learnt these skills, you know, mechanical skills, has learnt all of these character skills, you've got all of these attributes, you've got these special moves. To my mind, a boss battle should give you an opportunity to use all of those skills that you've acquired in a really fun way, to make you feel by that point really overpowered and really, really pleased with yourself. What Devil May Cry does is it puts you in a situation that you've never been in before in this game. Like, it turns into a shoot 'em up and a really bad one.
Mm.
And it's really odd, and it lasts about 15 minutes, this attack. And it isn't particularly difficult, to be honest. I mean, you need to save your energy for when you do end up on your feet. I mean, until I learned to cheese it and just go whack the boss and use health potions and then just keep whacking it, which in the end I completely cheesed it. It wasn't fun at all. Didn't use any of my abilities. I just basically cheesed it. But you need to make sure that you've got plenty of health. And in the first... I ended up being able to get through the shoot 'em up section without taking a hit. But that's still a good 10, 15 minutes of just boredom.
Yeah, yeah.
Whilst you're waiting for to do enough damage to move into his second form.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really strange design decisions.
But lots of that in this game, mate. I mean, lots and lots of that.
Yeah, see, those two bits... I think the rest of it comes down to a taste thing. It's like fixed cameras, isn't it? The game has fixed cameras. It has dramatic fixed cameras, but still fixed. Yeah, yep. And the movement does take a little bit of time to get used to.
Yeah, I got used to that quite easily, actually. That was fine.
But some people on Discord hated that, and struggled to get past it. It comes down, it's like tank controls in the game. I still love tank controls. If I had an opportunity, I would have put them on in this.
Yeah.
But some people hate them. So I think there's an element of taste here. You clearly didn't enjoy the moment-to-moment gameplay enough to make the grindy bits at least palatable, and that's fair enough. But I think there is some downright bizarre design choices.
That's not actually it, because I did like the moment-to-moment gameplay. I didn't like the
repetitiveness
of it. But I did like it. I liked it enough to even retry the game, start over, and I still feel like I'd like to get through this game at some point.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much.
It was... No, I definitely won't now, because I'm actually souring to it even more than just talking about it. But there's so many design flaws, if you ask me, in this game that just makes it annoying to play instead of satisfying to play. And it's not because the moment-to-moment gameplay and combat isn't satisfying. It's the fact you have to do the same stuff over and over and over again. It's just not for me, mate. And I'm really, really, really ready to play a game in Game Club that I actually like. So I'm hoping Planescape Torment is good.
It's funny because lots of people did think and still do think it was great. It's or even now it certainly is very high. If you look at critical top 100 PS2 games, it's very high. It will still likely feature in top 100 games of all time lists today. Now, whether that is a mark of its influence because it has spawned a 5 or 6 game series and Bayonetta is Hideki Kamiya is basically a spiritual successor. Akami is a beautiful game. That is considered a spiritual successor to Devil May Cry. It's made by the same team.
I'm wondering how much of that is just, gamers who actually suffered through it, who said, this is the best ever because look at me, I'm a man. I got through it.
Maybe there's some of that. I mean, I'd like to think that the respected... critical outlets of the day, like IGN gave it 9.6. IGN is a very well respected publication.
Yeah.
GameSpot 9.1, Game Informer 9.5. Famitsu, interestingly, I mean, 34 out of 40 is still high, but it's not as gushing as some of them. My take on it, I don't think I ever completed it back in the day. I don't think I would have been capable of it, to be honest. But I did complete it this time on real hardware. I think it's certainly not as good as I remembered it. I'll be completely honest. I would have said, if you'd have said to me, Devil May Cry, 3 months ago, if you said, oh, Devil May Cry, what do you think? I would have said, oh, it's one of the best games ever. It's brilliant. And I don't think that now. I still enjoyed it, but I would... I prefer a slower pace of game. I prefer something probably a little more cerebral. I love the Resi games. I think I still love Onimusha, although I probably need to test that now, having played Devil May Cry. I still love the Resi games. I still love the old Resi games. That's where it's at for me when it comes to Resi. The old Resi 2, one of my favourite games of all time. That probably is what I was maybe expected something a little bit closer to Resi when I was thinking back to Devil May Cry. And although I did enjoy it, and I was glad to see some people in Discord, some, not all, in Discord enjoying it, it's not, yeah, it's not the greatest of all time that I was probably selling it as.
It was a really divisive game in Discord.
So, yeah, it was. Yeah.
A few people loved it and played all the way through it. Most people picked it up, played it, and said, ugh, I don't want to touch this.
Yeah, I wouldn't say most. I think it was probably half and half. I mean, Roushi, half
and half maybe, yeah.
Roushi enjoyed it enough that he went and played the sequel, which is supposed to be not great. I've not played Devil May Cry 2, but that critically it didn't do very well at the time. But then Devil May Cry 3 was a real return to form, apparently. I'm watching this GameSpot history of Devil May Cry last night. That, I think, from what we've been talking about here for the last hour or so, I think Devil May Cry 3, and whilst I don't expect that you will ever go near it, I think actually may solve some of the things that you didn't like about it.
So I'll probably just stay away from this entire genre because I feel like I wasted too much of my life on it already. So
yeah, you're not about to pick Bayonetta for the next season of playthrough then?
Probably not. Probably not.
I don't think you'd like it.
Nope. Although, no, but actually, even though I've been really down on this game, it's like when we discussed what's that horrible, horrible RPG we played, Chris?
So now, what was it?
Yeah, you know, the one with the drunk who had to solve a murder case that was...
No, don't you start on that.
That didn't make any sense because it was just
Disco Elysium wrong. Is genuinely one of the greatest games ever made.
No, it really isn't. But when we played that, the reason that I would get annoyed with it was actually because I there was so much of it that I was enjoying, enjoying. So I wanted it to do stuff right. And it didn't in my book with the narrative. Something was just off there. I feel the same about Devil May Cry. I really enjoyed a lot of it. I enjoyed the exploring, but stuff got in the way all the time. I wanted to actually get through. I enjoyed the moment-to-moment gameplay, but a lot of the boss fights didn't really click with me. So I wanted to finish this game. And I may be just a glutton for punishment, but I could see myself picking this up again in 6 months or a year and seeing if I could actually get through it. And knowing this time that I need to try to be more stylish. I need to try to do the combat in a different way so I get some more red orbs so I actually can upgrade my weapons more than once or twice, which is all that I got along to. So I would like to go through this game, and I didn't hate it so much that I will never touch it again. Definitely not. I would like to actually get through it, but that's what I did when I restarted it, and it soured on me after 5-6 missions again.
Well, it was so still raw.
I'm not ready yet.
I think if you went back to it, if you left it a year or so, you'll give it a decent, knowing now what you know.
And maybe really watching a few YouTube videos on how to actually do it, probably. Maybe that would be more fun for me. But as it was, picking this game up and playing it, no, I didn't have fun. I didn't have fun. I suffered through it because of the podcast.
But aren't you glad that you've experienced this sacred cow now?
So I made you play one of the best point-and-click adventure games ever made. And this is what you give me, a turd sandwich. I don't know how I deserved this or what I've done, but... No, I'm not glad I've tried this, Chris.
It wasn't your cup of tea.
No, definitely
In the
not.
Words of the Danes, it wasn't hygge.
Hygge.
Was it?
No, it wasn't. Overhovedet ikke hyggeligt.
No. But look, we've done it now. You've played it.
Yes.
You can always say that you've given it a go. And when I say to you that you don't like games that you've never played before, this is just another example that I can use. That, isn't it?
No, you can't.
It is.
But you know me, I'm not even happy that I've tried it because I didn't finish it. I wanted to finish it.
Yeah. And to be fair, you really tried.
I did.
You probably spent more time playing this than anybody else on Discord.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, no, I can't criticize you for not giving it a go because you did. Look, mate, you know my view on it. It's absolutely fine not to like stuff, you know, and we're all different, and everyone has opinions. What makes the world go round? I just, you know, I'd agree with you on this, but then we'd both be wrong, wouldn't we?
Yes, yes. No, I am glad I tried it, and I did enjoy a lot of it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have stuck with it for so long. But yes, it just annoyed me that those design flaws, as I would call them, was there. Yeah, that soured the experience.
Well, there we go. As you say, we will hopefully find a game in the game club this year that we both like.
Perhaps. Let's see. And I'm enjoying Planescape Torment so far.
Yeah. Well, that's the next game, isn't it? So we're already, it's the 8th of August as we record.
Yes. We're normally already... we'll be talking about which RPG won the vote, but everybody knows by now.
Yeah.
So,
it's Planescape Torment. It was reasonably close between that and Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, which I think would have been great as well, to be honest. Mm. Yeah. But Planescape Torment did win out, and it's really fun actually on Discord because it's, you know, we're finding out quite quickly that it's, you know, like Disco Elysium, which you just mentioned, was heavily influenced by Planescape. It's there are multiple ways to do these things depending on how you built your character and whatnot. And we're already sharing experiences of how we've done certain things, and everyone seems to be enjoying it, which is good.
So right now I've built a character that isn't really strong or has any kind of dexterity, but has lots of charisma, charm, and intelligence. So I want to try to get through this without any combat if possible, or with as little combat as possible.
The annoying thing is we're playing it in exactly the same way, which I probably should have realized that's what we would do. I should have done the exact opposite. But that's exactly me as well. So I have... There's one comp which annoyed me a little bit.
That's it, mate. I'm going to re-roll then. I've only played like half an hour. I'm going to re-roll as a straight-up warrior.
A Bruce, are you?
Yeah.
I'm probably about 3 hours in.
Okay. I'll restart. Yeah. Okay. It was just my initial thought was, let's see if I can actually get this to just be a big narrative experience and no combat.
Yeah, because it would be fun because there's plenty... The game gives you plenty of opportunity to be a brute in that opening section, and I've shied away from it every single time.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
It's going to be good. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a long game, but I'm hoping that there will be a mainline quest that we can at least get through by the end of September, even if we then crack on and play a bit more of it.
Yeah.
But we do. And also, we ought to mention as well that there is a high score competition going on in Discord. So if you're listening to this and you're not in Discord and you fancy a bit of a bash at 1942, what a game, by the way. I'd never played it.
Seriously?
I had never played it until about 3 days.
I loved playing that in the arcade. We had that at the local chippy, I remember.
It's great, brilliant.
Game. Yes, yes. Wonderful.
It's very, very addictive. Although King Trilo suggested... 1942, and I'm going to call him out that he has selected a game that he is already very good at.
Could be.
Because his score is ridiculous already.
So you are using the loops to avoid bullets and so on?
Yeah, but it's hard to react quickly enough, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You start, I've not played it all that much, but you start to know when you're in trouble before the bullets actually... Like, I'm starting to be able to tell, I'm in a position now where I'm trapped, so I'll do a little loop.
Mm.
It's really good. So if you listen to this and you're not in Discord and you fancy a high score competition at 1942, you know where to come because that is going on at the same time as Planescape in the Game Club channel.
Yes, and they are playing the 1942 ROM and MAME.
Yeah.
With the standard settings, which would mean you only had... Two lives, the one that you start with and one extra.
What's that all about? Two lives?
yeah, it's a tough game.
Can you get extra lives, you know, by continuing? Is that fair?
No. Oh. I mean, nobody would ever do that, Chris.
Nobody would do that, would they?
No, that would be low. That would be really low.
That would be cheating.
Yes.
After all, yeah. Anyway, moving on. Moving on quickly. So that'll be us for the next couple of months, and then... We're going to go off on our summer vacation, although there are other Retro Asylum episodes planned, so I suspect there will be other stuff before we next convene, Mads.
Yes.
towards the end of September.
Mm.
Any shout-outs, mate?
Yeah, I'd like to shout out King Trilo again. We've mentioned it a few times. Thanks a lot for the game, the Miles and Kilo. That was great fun. And, of course, all of our other wonderful Discord members. I mean, it's really a lively place there these days, and lots of discussion going on both Planescape Torment right now and 1942. So it's a great place to hang out. And it's come to a point now where I can't read more than 20% of what's actually written there because it's so active. But I enjoy when I do pop by every now and again.
Yo, I'm just looking at our Discord channel now and I'm just laughing to myself that people are still posting in the Manic Miner channel.
Really?
There's been posts in that this evening.
Okay.
Amazing. 2 years almost. More. 3 years.
More than 2 years,
that.
I think. Yeah. I remember
Christ
that.
Alive.
See, that was a good game, Chris. I liked playing that.
Mate, I like good games. I only bring to you good games.
Yes.
So sometimes you don't like them.
Oh, okay. That's the problem.
It's you, not the game. You must see this.
Yes.
I would just like, I'd like to echo that shout out to the Discord community. Wonderful, wonderful place. It makes playing these games so much more fun than if we were just playing them on our own.
Yes.
And,
shout out Old Man Jim as well.
I was just going to say a happy birthday to Jim and Andy.
Yep.
Who over on Jim's just turned 40 over on playthrough.
Yeah, arthritis setting in. And,
arthritis, yeah. It's really funny because we kind of got together as a group, and both Andy and I are born on exactly the same day.
Yep.
And Jim was born the day before a year later. So it's really weird. The three of us are all so close in age, but we all had our birthdays last week, so a big happy birthday to them. We are on an unplanned hiatus on playthrough just because with holidays we weren't considerate enough with one another that we'd all go on holiday at the same time. We are literally all on holiday at different times.
Yes.
Which has meant scheduling the To the Moon episode to be impossible.
Yeah,
but that's all right because it gives us a chance to replay it and let it sink in before we record probably early September on that one.
Yeah, and probably gives me a chance to play through Dead Space.
Yes,
because you guys played through that in the pilot episodes.
Yeah,
because
do it.
Dead Space 2 is now on the list.
Yeah, dude, Dead Space is it, and Dead Space is a short game. No, it
I'm
is.
I'm never ever listening to you again when you say that, mate. Never,
and
that's,
it's not
that's done.
It does have its annoying parts, but it's not really that difficult, Dead Space. And you can definitely get through that in like 8 to 10 hours.
Okay.
So, a long weekend. If you've got a quiet weekend, mate,
We're back to the whole Ghosts and Goblins being a 15-minute game.
Different. Dead Space isn't difficult, don't worry. Dead Space is a proper modern game that isn't difficult.
Okay. Yeah, well, I've already played through the first chapter, and it wasn't difficult, but it's good fun.
Nah, it does. Like, there's parts in it which are blooming annoying, particularly the zero gravity sections are.
Okay.
Yeah, anyone who's listened to the playthrough pilot episodes will know my views on those, but it's good. And I think the sequel, as the nights start drawing in, will be bloody terrifying.
So what's really annoying me right now, I mean, I'm enjoying the game, but what is really taking me out of the mood all the time is the physics on the dead bodies. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, they've not aged
these well. Huge hulking beasts. They attack you. They look like they weigh 100 kilos. It's a huge thing. You shoot it, and then it falls down, and for some reason, it loses 98% of its mass. Because then you walk past it, and you just strafe it with your right pinky, and it goes flying across the room.
They were really proud of those physics. You know, if you watch back at developer interviews about Dead Space, they were really proud of those ragdoll physics.
How could they be proud of that? Everybody would just be laughing their asses off instead of being scared walking through those dead bodies.
Yeah, no, they've not aged well. I'm hoping that it's going to be fixed with Dead Space 2, but it was only a couple of years later.
Yeah.
I suspect.
I mean, it's to a point where it is taking me out of the suspension.
It stops being funny after a while and just a bit like, this is really weird now.
Yeah,
because you
can
trail the bodies around.
Yes. If you walk into them, you'll just drag them along because of course, if you move your feet, you'll be when you're at a normal walking pace, you'll be kicking hard enough to like drag a body behind exactly. you. No worries. They'll be flying in front of you. But,
their bodies aren't subject to gravity, are they?
No. Maybe that's it.
Mm. As soon as you die, you lose all. So you're not subject to gravity anymore. No, it is definitely a feature of the game which is of its time.
Yes, yes. But apart from that, I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
that's good. Right, enough waffle. Let's get out of here and wish our listeners a fond farewell.
Farewell.
Take care all. Cheers. Bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures in a fantasy zone. Pretty soon they'll be off on a mission, come and hear them go.
Retro Asylum.
Well, only their listeners know.
Retro Asylum.